All right, everyone. This is Dr. April Murdaugh here with Becoming a Financially Confident Woman podcast. I am here with a very, very, very special friend. I don't know how long I've known you, Kimberly, but I know we were young on Park Hill, like, or in Staten Island, right?
11.
Yes. And she is a long, long child. You know, it's very rare that you keep in touch with your friends from childhood. And we don't talk every day. We don't talk every week. Hell, we don't talk every year, right?
Right.
But we see each other and it just, we start talking and it just turns right back to, you know, when we were younger and just catching up. And so, but what makes her so special today is that Kimberly has lived through some trauma. Her husband, at a very, very young age, was one of the people in the Twin Towers when they were attacked, 9/11. And at the time, they had just had their third child, if I recall.
Yes.
And Kim suddenly became a single mom whose husband went to work one day and didn't come home. And so I wanted her to come on today to share her story, just to educate women and help us to be cognizant of maybe things we should do. No one can be prepared for this. But so I'm welcoming to the show, Kimberly Trimmingham. Thank you so much, Kim, for coming
thank
on
you,
and talking to us.
April, thank you so much for having me. Thank you. Thank you. This is fantastic. I'm glad we're talking. I'm glad we're sharing.
I am too. And, you know, we just had like a pre-discussion before we got on this podcast. But, Kim, I just want you to talk about what happened. How it happened, how you found out, like just whatever you feel comfortable sharing.
Yeah. So at that time, I was living in Staten Island, New York, and I was actually an assistant manager at New York and Company in the Staten Island Mall. So one of my neighbors, she watched my youngest and my two older children. My daughter was 8 at the time. And my older son was 6 at the time. They were in elementary school. And I was, my husband actually just started a job, IT, for Marsh McLennan. He was in the IT department. He knew everything about computers. And that was, you know, just starting out at that time.
Yeah.
And he actually, he was working at different tech jobs, learning the computer game, because he was really, really smart with those things, and he was always working on a computer at the house or whatever. And he landed this really good job working at this financial company, Marsh McLennan, in IT, and he started September 4th. Wow. So I would always tell people, if he was working at that job, like if he was there already like 6 months in, he wouldn't have been going in so early. You know, he would have been kind of just making it there on time, but he just started. So he went in early. You know, he had to catch a certain ferry to get into Manhattan. So it was my responsibility to make sure my little one, you know, got to the babysitter and that I would head off to work. So I bring him over to the babysitter, and my babysitter is sitting in front of the television. And she's like, her face is planted in the television, and I'm taking out, you know, his stuff and putting it in the refrigerator. I'm like, what are you watching on television? And she was just like, I can't believe all those people. And I said, what are you talking about? So I go look at the television and I see the towers are on fire, and my brain immediately thinks, oh, this is not happening. This is a movie, or this happened in 1993. Or so, you know, like this is not happening now. And she said, no, Kim, this is happening now. So I immediately went to the phone to try and call my husband. And I remember distinctly that it rang a couple of times and then it went dead. And so now, like, my heart was in my throat and I was like, oh my God, I didn't even know what floor he worked on at the time. That's how, like, I didn't even think about it until then. I was like, I don't even know what floor he works on. He just got the job. I don't know what floor is he on. So I was silently freaking out, but there was something that told me that he wasn't going to come home. But I didn't want to admit that I knew that. It was like a feeling came over me like he's not going to come home. But I kept thinking to myself, no, he'll come home. He'll come home. So that was like the beginning right there. That was the beginning of, oh, you got to do this by yourself. You got to do this by yourself.
So when did you actually find out that he wasn't going to come home?
So it was about 2 weeks. We lived in this small, this cute little two-bedroom apartment. And if I tell you that there was people coming to my house every day, checking to see if we were okay, if he came back, if we needed anything. I mean, a lot of these people were people, friends that he made while we were living on Staten Island, because he was a basketball player. So he played on basketball league, and, you know, he went to college at Staten Island. So he was, a lot of people knew who he was on Staten Island, and he was a friendly guy. So we got a lot of people coming and checking in. And after 2 weeks, his cousin, who was a detective at the time, she was out there looking for him. Her and her friends were out there looking for him. And I kind of was just in a daze for that 2 weeks. I was in and out. I don't even really remember. I remember people coming in and out. And I remember my mom saying to me, you know what, we might have to start thinking about planning a memorial. And I didn't want to talk about it. And then his family, he has a very big family, which my in-laws are amazing. I'm blessed that, you know, I have such an amazing connection with them. You know, they were very supportive, and his aunt, she, in a very nice way, she, like, after a month, you know, she started talking to me and saying, you know what, honey, we're going to have to do something. We're going to have to put him to rest some way. And, so that was really, really hard. Because I just didn't want to let go of the fact that he wasn't going to be there, but still, I knew that he wasn't coming back. You know, it was just like, I was just holding on, that, you know, there was some hope, like, you know, maybe somebody, you know, found him, and maybe he had amnesia and he didn't know where he was, or, you know, I was holding on to all kinds of stuff, but I had to come to terms that, yeah, because where he was in the building, there was no way, because he was like on the 104th floor. That's where there was no way he was coming back. Yeah, there was no way.
Wow. So the kids were how old?
So my daughter Therese was 8, and my older son Kanan was 6, and then my baby, he was only 3. So he really didn't get to know his daddy. And the ironic thing is, well, the beautiful thing is, he looks just like him. Oh. Just like him.
So you see him in him all the time.
All the time, all the time. And what I love is that they all have a piece of him, all of them. Like Therese, I was joking with you earlier before that, you know, I'm not a tech whiz at all, but my daughter, tech genius, because he would sit her on his lap and he would show her how to use the keyboard and show her little things. And then she learned it in school, because she actually went to the charter school, Michael J. Petrides in Staten Island, and they taught them in kindergarten. Wow. So she's a tech genius. And my oldest son, Kanan, is very charismatic like him. Super, like, everybody adores him. He's great. I mean, he majored in communications in college. And he was actually an activist. He was, while he was studying at William Patterson University in New Jersey, he was part of Black Lives Matter, and he and his group, they would travel and do all different types of protesting, peaceful protesting, and he would do a lot of talks in different campuses throughout Jersey. And he even traveled down to when they had the big protests in Ferguson. He was down there
Wow.
Yeah, I was really proud of him. I mean, I'm proud of all my children, but I'm proud that they will stand up for those that can't stand up for themselves.
Yeah,
So,
so talk about that. You'd mentioned earlier when we were talking before we got on here about, being noticed as a Black family who's lost a loved one in 9/11, right? And the fact that you didn't really see maybe a lot of that in the media. And tell me how that happened, how that resonated with you and this experience.
Noticing that, there wasn't many people of color, minorities that were talked about. Because there were a lot of people that lost, and I remember after that time, I went to a lot of different, I don't want to say events, but there were a lot of different organizations that were offering to help families in need that experienced a loss. So to answer that part of your question, I realized, like, whenever I was, my father was taking me to all these places because, we were financially in need. We were financially in need. So my father, he would take me to all these places. Like, there was a pier, in New York City that was set up for people that were actually trying to find loved ones, or they needed financial support, all kinds of charities and people were there to help, and we would show up. And it always seemed like there wasn't many people of color that needed assistance. I got what I needed, and I was very grateful for that. And there was a lot of people that stepped up to help, because my head was in a fog. Thank goodness for my dad and for my, in-laws, and there was a lot of people that did surround us with support. And so there was, I did notice that. And that's why we had our conversation before the interview, and I told you that I did some activism work for 9/11 last year. That was one of the reasons why I did do it, because I wanted to represent the people of color that are part of this, that, that weren't represented. But there was a lot of Black and brown people that, they didn't, they might not have had big, financial career jobs or something, but there were a lot of Black and brown people that were lost too. So, I wanted to make sure that, we represented that for them.
No, that's very important that you did that, even in the middle of you still grieving. Helping out other people. That's definitely admirable. So tell me, you said, how old were you, Kim, when this happened? How old? How
Oh,
old were you, Kim?
I was 32, and Terrence would have been his actually he was born on December 25th. He would have been 30.
Okay. So you guys were really young. So
Yeah.
when you got married, right, did anyone like have a conversation about finances and planning for the unforeseen stuff that could
Yeah,
happen?
girl, we did not talk about that. It wasn't talked about. It was not talked about. We were doing the day-to-day finances and struggling. And I remember, that's why I appreciate where I am now, because I remember, like, oh, do we have enough money to get some food, what we need to get. And he when he was in college and he finished college, he had a basketball scholarship, and my daughter was only 3 at the time, and I was right about to have my oldest son, and he got an offer to play basketball overseas in the Philippines. And he left 3 days after my oldest son was born, and I had to go on public assistance. I had to go on public assistance because, I didn't want, which I'm so glad I didn't do. I didn't want to say, tell him, you can't go because, I'm getting ready to have another baby or whatever. And I was like, look, if you're going to try and make this happen, try and make it happen. I got my mother and father can help me. Your family's here. he didn't even know that I went on public assistance when he left. He was gone for 6 months. And I went on public assistance, and I was on public assistance for 1 year. He came back, you know, he immediately got temp jobs and stuff like that to, you know, make money. But I mean, the struggle was real. We were mm-hmm. trying to figure it out day by day. Mm-hmm. You know, we, mm-hmm. unfortunately, you know, we weren't taught how to manage our money. Even, you know, I have to honestly say, you know, my mother and father didn't really teach me that as well, because they were still figuring it out. You mm-hmm. know, they were still figuring it out, even though I wouldn't say I had a childhood that I struggled. My parents tried to give my brother and I, because it's just my brother and I, tried to give us, you know, a good childhood. But because they didn't really know, there was no financial structure when they got married, they were figuring out how they were going. So it was like, I didn't get any really strong financial advice when I got married. Yeah. And my husband, unfortunately, his father wasn't in his life. It was he had his mom and his aunts, and you know, and his mom, she was a domestic, and she worked hard, and so you know, that was minimal too. We were just trying to figure it out.
New kids, new marriage, new life, and something happened. So I know you said, you know, people were good to you and you know, you were able to make it and they provided help. So how did that work? I mean, without getting into specifics, how did that help you and the children, especially financially? I mean, how did you, yeah. I mean, you yeah, just started, we, you know, just got
yeah, started. Yeah, I actually did not know, I would not have known where to go if it was not for people that were calling me, neighbors, and they were like, oh, I just want to let you know that such and such organization is doing this, if you need that, like coming to my door and giving me the information, giving wow. me the phone number on this little piece of paper that they saw on the news. Like, I would not have known because my head was not there. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. So like my father, he would come in, you know, they would come because my parents lived in Westchester at the time. So they would come down, my mom would watch the kids, and my dad would drag me into the city, and we would go to all these different organizations. The temp company, one of the temp businesses that he worked for, they gave me a check for $10,000. Which I thought was amazing. I was just like, I was floored. They asked me to come to they had something for her, and I was like, okay, thank you. And my father was so funny. He was like, this is all y'all giving, huh? And I was like, Dad. I was like, Dad. But, you know, it was things like that. Like, I was so grateful, you know, all charities, and I'm gonna tell you, this will bring a tear to anybody's eye. I would get cards in the mail from people from Iowa, Chicago,
wow.
Illinois, like all over the country. There might be a dollar in there, or a $25 check, or a $100 check. Did not know these people. And they're sending their condolences with whatever they were willing to give. And what I did was, I went to, remember in the mall, they used to have like, you know, you can go get your photos taken and, mm-hmm. you know, I went, in fact, I still have the picture. I have it in a frame, and I dressed the kids up. It was hard to do this, but I dressed the kids up, and like I was taking a Christmas photo, and I had cards made out of that photo. So anytime somebody would send me something, I would mm-hmm. handwrite them a note. And I would thank them and send that card off to somebody. I must wow. have sent over 200 cards out.
Wow.
And that's the kind of support I was getting. Like, I was getting support coming from, to the point where it was almost overwhelming. But mm-hmm. I know, honestly, I could not have done that on my own because my head was not in the space to even think about that. I didn't really get in the headspace like, okay, I got to figure this out on my own. I have to act like nobody else exists, and I got to do this and figure out how I'm going to raise these kids on my own. It wasn't until like the new year, 2002, where I've like after Christmas, I just was just like, okay, we need to come up with some kind of plan. What are we going to do? How are we going to move forward without him, without Terrence?
Yeah.
How are we going to move forward? Because here's the thing. I'm normally not a person that, like I will figure out things on my own, even though I have support, but that will started to come back to me. It was like, oh no, I got to figure out how I'm going to exist with these three children without my husband. And you know, my parents were like, oh, you know, we can all live together and this. And I necessarily didn't want to do that. That wasn't necessarily my first thing, you know, was to move in with my parents or have a place with my parents. I don't know what I want to do, but I know right now I need to figure out how I'm going to exist without him. So the first thing that happened was my landlord was nice enough when we were in a two-bedroom apartment, when there was a three-bedroom available, he offered that to us. And that was my start of, okay, I'm doing this without him.
Strong, had to kind of go into survival mode now, right? Because
I mean, I'm my sign is Taurus the Bull, so I was gonna figure it out.
Once
I pulled myself together, I was like, okay, now we have to figure out what we're gonna do. We're gonna do this. We're gonna figure this out. And here's the thing, you know, especially women of color, you know, everything falls on our shoulders anyway. So it's almost like you have no choice but to figure it out. And I feel like you, we know a lot of strong Black women.
Yes, we do. I mean, you know, we think about our mothers.
Yes.
And, you know, just the women we've seen in our lives.
Yes.
Make it through some really challenging times with no clue of how they're going to get through it. And so.
Yeah. And they
so
do.
You were able to stand, and you were able to stand on the shoulders of those women.
Yes,
make it through with three children in such a devastating way. So, tell me about what happened next. Like, how did you recoup? How did you get on your feet? How did you land?
So what I had to figure out, which I didn't know, because this was all like a really serious learning process for me. You know, my mother gave me guidance. At the time, she was she worked in the flooring industry for years. So she had friends that she worked in flooring industry, but she also sat on a panel of the New York, New Jersey Purchasing Council, which basically is it supports minority-owned businesses. So she was able to get a lot of references on how I can handle, you know, finances, you know, what to do with these finances that were coming in for support and how to manage my funds and how to do that, because it was coming in and it was just sitting in the bank and I didn't know what to do with that. I didn't know how to handle that. So there was, you know, someone that she introduced me to at first, to be perfectly honest, because I'm kind of a person that works off of my intuition and my gut. So, you know, there was one person that I started working with and I didn't feel like I was getting the treatment, the attention that I needed. So I started looking for somebody else. And that's what wound up happening. Like I kind of bounced around a little bit to find the right person to be able to help me, guide me what to do with this money that's coming in and make sure. Because there was, you know, people that were, you know, organizations that were offering money to set my children up for their education. But I had to have a bank account and it had to be like for directly for them. So I couldn't spend it, which I completely understood because I wasn't that kind of person. So I had to learn how to do that, you know, get the right kind of trust and all this stuff. And luckily I was able to find someone that can guide me in that way. But it was a real serious, like a heavy duty, you know, like you got to learn this right now. You know, this is on the fly. I had to understand a lot of terminology. It was a little overwhelming, but you know, my concern was always like, as long as my kids are good, as long as they're good, that was it. You know, it was like, okay, this is going to be all right. X, Y, and Z is for them. And I got to do this, that, and the other thing. Okay. And then also I have the same accountant that I had since I was 16, 17 years old. So that, and I trust him. So that was important.
Yes.
So I would ask him a lot of questions too.
Yes.
So that was helpful.
And I think you pointed out something really important, you know, getting educated and having people around you that you could trust.
Right.
Especially when you're in a vulnerable position like this.
Right.
Yeah, because you don't know what to do. You're just trying to make it day by day. And you have three other humans that are depending
on you. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, how in the world are we going to make it? You know, so yeah, that is, you point out something very important that you made sure and God surrounded you with good people.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that all hands to God, all hands to God. Because one of the things I also felt was very important, not just the financial aspect of it, was the mental aspect of it. And there was a lot of services available to us, especially therapy. So I took advantage of all of that for my children. There was family therapy. There was individual therapy. There was art therapy. I mean, you could probably pull me up in Staten Island Advance. Like, you know, the kids and I were in a lot of different things and programs that were available to us. I took advantage of that. I took advantage of anything that I thought that was, because my primary goal was not just the finances. My primary goal with my children was, this was my mantra, April. This was my mantra, and I manifested it to be true. My mantra was, I just want to raise healthy, not only physically, but mentally and emotionally, individuals that will be able to contribute to society and will be good people and can enjoy their life and not have what happened to their father, a handicap, that they would not be able to live their best life because this horrible thing happened to them. Like, that was something that I would constantly say to myself, how can I raise these to be good human beings that will still be able to want to contribute to society and help other people and just live their best lives? How can I do that? How can I do that, God? How can I do that? Just lead me to be able to do that for them. Let me do it.
But you've done that. So tell us.
Yeah.
As we come to a little bit of a close, but tell us about the children. How old are they now? How we talked a little bit about how they cope with 9/11, but what they are doing. And this is a testament to that mantra, because, you know, you guys out there, what you say, you know, comes out, the energy you put out, your mindset goes into your heart and it manifests. You know, I take yoga. It was so funny. I walked in this yoga studio the other day and my yoga teacher had this shirt on, excuse the French, but she said, it said, manifest that shit. You know,
that's right. That's right.
You know, but you did that. So tell us about these amazing children.
Oh my goodness. They are so cool. I always say that if they weren't my children, I would hang out with them. They're so cool. So my daughter's 30, her name's Therese. She graduated from NYU with a BFA. So she's a working actress, not right now because everybody's on strike, but she's also a harpist. So that's how she's making her money right now. She's playing at weddings and events. She's been playing the harp since she was 11. And she is actually phenomenal. You could check her out on online.
I've heard. I've been watching. I've listened.
Yeah, she's so cool. In fact, right before we started, she's learning one of Stevie Wonder's songs right now. And I was just, oh, Ribbon in the Sky. I was about to cry.
Oh my
So,
God.
and then Andre, who's my youngest, he graduated from the College of St. Rose in Albany with his criminal justice degree. So he's a paralegal at a law firm up in Schenectady, actually. And then Kanan, my Black Power movement, my activist, he's 28, and he graduated with his communication degree from William Patterson University, and he actually is into finance and day trading, and he's very, like, he's already gone to a couple of wealth management seminars in Miami. He's really into it, and he's actually about to move into an apartment in Soho. And they're, you know what, they're really cool individuals. They are aware that, and here's the thing about what they went through, it made them realize how small we are in the universe and how we all need each other, because they make great friends. They're very reliable. They're caring. I mean, you know, I just get tear. I tear up when I think about, you know, how they're always willing to help somebody in need, which is really, really cool. But here's the thing. That's what I asked for. You know, that's what I manifested.
Yes, you
know?
You did.
And I would say the best thing that I did while I was raising them is I homeschooled them for 1 year. My daughter was in eighth grade, Kanan. So Therese was in eighth grade, Kanan was in sixth grade, and Andre was in third grade. And I homeschooled them 1 year, drove them across the country, and took them to like national parks. You know, we went to South Dakota, we went to a Sioux reservation, and we talked to people. We had interactions with people that didn't look just like us. We met all different types of people. We went to all different types of places. And when they went back into school, I remember Andre's, he was in fourth grade, and his teacher said at a parent teacher conference, we call Andre our little traveler, because every time we talk about some place in America, he says, oh, I've been there. And he tells us all about it. And I said, that's exactly what I wanted him to be able to do. Wow. So I credit the fact that I traveled with my children and exposed them to people that didn't look like them, and outside of our backyard, that they're able to step into any room and be able to interact with anybody and feel comfortable about that. And they don't, you know, just look at somebody and then, you know, they don't prejudge. They talk to somebody. If they connect with somebody, they connect with them. If they don't, they don't. No judgment there, you know, no drama, you know, they just keep it moving. But like I said, you know, if they weren't mine, I would want to hang out with them, because they are pretty cool and they're funny.
They are. I see them. Good grief. That our kids have gotten so big.
Yeah.
So out of this experience of loss, and obviously you didn't just pick yourself up, you flew.
Yeah.
What lesson would you give a woman that may have gone through that or going through that right now?
Definitely, you know, whatever type of trauma a woman might go through, especially having children, knowing that you have the strength in you, like it is there. It is there. And then also, I would also say not to be afraid to ask for help, because there were times where I was afraid to ask for help and ask for assistance. And I was reminded that it was okay to ask for help. So that's also another one. And knowing that the road that you're traveling on, it's part of your journey. And it's no matter how bad it seems, there's a lesson in that for you. There's a lesson. No, how, you know, like no matter how long that tunnel seems and you can barely see the light, especially if you have children, you're walking that tunnel because you're walking it for your children.
Yeah.
And all I can remember was thinking to myself that I can't give up because they need me. They need me. And when I had my health battle in 2018, I remember my kids coming to me and saying, "Mommy, we got you.
Mm-hmm.
Got you. It's okay."
Yeah.
Because I felt like I, you know, there was that, I like broke down because it was like I was just emotionally and physically tired because I've been through so much. But to know that, you know, I raised individuals and they saw the love and care and how much I put them first, that they turned around and they said, "We got you, Mom." That meant the world to me. And, you know, like it so just knowing that, A, number one, first, God's got your back. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could do all things through Christ. We know
that's
this.
Right. That's right.
We know this. Mm-hmm. And and knowing that, you know, there for every beginning, there is an ending.
Mm-hmm.
And you will make it through. You will make it through. That's so right. I'm so appreciative. I'm so appreciative of my journey. I am so appreciative of my journey. You know, one of my favorite characters growing up was Wonder Woman. And look at here.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. You did that. You did that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You manifested that too, huh?
I manifested that too. I always wanted to be Wonder Woman. Well, I am.
I'm Wonder Woman. You got it. You got it. You got it. So, real quick, tell us about you, where you are now in your space. Kids grown.
Mm-hmm.
Did you remarry? How did that work out for you? And what are you up to now?
I was in a relationship. I actually did get engaged. I got engaged in 2005 and we were together for about 7 years. It did not work out. Mm-hmm. And that was a great learning lesson for me. It was hard, but it was a great learning lesson because Kimberly learned what she deserved and what she was not going to accept.
Mm-hmm.
So I am single now because I choose to be single because I'm still working on some things with myself. And I haven't found the person that I feel is right for me. I'm actually in a process right now where I'm actually working on a certification, a well-being certification, because I've did so well with my health challenge that I want to be able to help other people be healthy as well. So I'm focused on that. I, you know, started modeling a couple of years ago, so I want to see where that goes as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just believe that, you know, our journey, this is what life's about. You're on a journey, right? So why not try and enjoy that journey? Like it doesn't have to be an uphill battle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to be an uphill battle. And that's one of the things that I also realized recently. I was like, everything doesn't have to be a fight. Like, you know, let me just go with the flow. If I don't like this, let me try that out and see how that works out. But what I feel passionate about, which I'm now realizing, is that I'm so passionate about this well-being program that I'm a part of that I'm like, oh, okay, well, let me focus on that. You know, because I think this is my purpose. My purpose is to be able to help other people find their health, you know, get their health right. So, you know, like I said, it doesn't have to be an uphill battle, you know. And, you know, do I have my moments? Yes, I do. But I make sure what helps, I use the tools that I've collected over the years when I have my moments.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know what that's, and that's important too, knowing what, when you are having a moment, what are the tools that you reach for that help you get out of that moment? You know, what is it, going for a run? You know, going to the gym? Is it, you know, meditating? You know, going to church? Whatever it is, what is it for you? I know it, what it is for me. I know what my tools are. So yeah, that I'm looking forward to seeing what comes up next for me in my journey. I it's pretty exciting to think about what I'm now working towards, my goals, and mm-hmm. how that's going to unfold. So basically what I'm saying is I'm welcoming my unfoldment. I'm welcoming yeah. that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm excited to see. I've already seen glimpses of it, and it's fantastic looking from my view.
Thank you.
You know, I, you know, think you are an extremely strong woman. Something so devastating, raising three children on your own, three really good individuals, like you said, who can yes, function in society, and they all have college degrees.
Thank yes. You.
Mm-hmm. So. That is something to be said. And so even with all the challenges, you know, I think one of the things, and I hope people take away from this conversation, is the support
yes.
that you had and asking for help. I think that is so important because especially Black women,
yes.
maybe minority women, but we don't like to ask, you know,
yes.
this thing, you know, we're supposed to be the strong woman syndrome.
Right.
And so we don't really do that. So I think that is an excellent lesson that you shared. I think your whole story is an excellent story of resilience. And that's why I wanted to share it with people. Sure, you got help. Sure, you know, but you had to pick yourself up. You had
right.
to get the mental help, the services
right.
that you need for you and your children to now be at this stage. So Kim, I just want to thank you for your time. I want to thank you for sharing your story with us. I know it is, especially September 11th was just last week. I know it's a tough time, and I appreciate it because I don't even think, to be honest, you and I have had a conversation where you provided the details the way you have today. I just kind of was, you know, I didn't want to ask, you know, I just felt like,
yeah,
you don't want to dig in people's business, but I thought it would be good for women to know
sure.
because you know, of the surprise of the one minute you have a spouse and you guys
right.
are working together and the next minute you don't. And how do you survive mentally, emotionally, financially, spiritually, how do you make it? And so thank you for sharing that part of that with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me on and thank you for doing what you're doing. I mean, like I said, you know, we're not taught in school how to handle our finances.
Mm-hmm.
And we're definitely not taught at home. So what you're doing is a huge service to not just everybody, but especially to the Black and Brown community.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we need that. We absolutely need this.
Yeah. Yeah. I know the reason why I do it is, you know, we're the fastest growing first generation millionaires right now.
Right, right.
And so, but first generation, which means that we don't have anybody's shoulders to stand on to make
right.
it a legacy. So that's important to me. And particularly women of all shapes, sizes, and colors. We just, you know, we're usually behind the eight ball and we're not educated in this space. So that's my passion and I
yeah.
love it. So.
I like I said, I appreciate you. I appreciate
Thank
you,
you girl. Thank you. Thank you for your time. We must connect again.
Absolutely.
For sure. For sure.
Absolutely.
For sure. For sure.
Absolutely. Let's see what happens next year.
Yes. Yes. I'm excited. I can't wait to see your more modeling posts and traveling posts and your certification being done and you helping
yes.
other people get healthy and well. So
yes, yes, yes. And I want to see how many millionaires you got under your belt.
Yes, absolutely.
Claim
absolutely.
It.
Yes. Yes. All right,
dear. I'll be one of them. I'll be one of them.
You will. You will. That's right. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I agree. I so agree. Yes, yes. All right, my dear.
Darling.
We'll talk soon.
All right. Peace and blessings.
Peace and blessings to you too.
Bye-bye.